You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Presents Will Smith wants an Oscar again, and he's gonna make all of you suffer.
Starring tugging at your heartstrings.
Hey, to be fair to Will Smith,
do we have to?
But the man was in Suicide Squad, which he probably looks like he didn't even want to be in, but it's like, y'all need this.
I'd rather watch Suicide Squad five more times than sit through this.
This is the most un-Will Smith movie I've ever seen, though, in my life. I think he had like the flattest role. This was
kind of amazing in a movie that it's supposed to be about a guy learning to love again, yet also still managing to be the magical Negro to all his friends.
In his way. Uh-huh. I mean, but this is definitely, like, I felt like the trailer should be, like, from the terrible agent who had Will Smith sign up for The Pursuit of Happiness and 7 pounds.
Hey, I love The Pursuit of Happiness. You talk about the shit you want.
Well,
I love that movie.
You're going to have to be in the minority
With the emotional range of the video store scene in I Am Legend.
Yeah. No! Fred!
Do you know what?
No.
I have not seen, actually going by 7 pounds, I have not seen that movie, but I have two friends, one who loathed it, another one who thought it was the best movie he'd ever seen in his life.
Was that friend 3 years old?
No, they're both in their 20s, surprisingly enough.
But here's the thing, that's the point of like movies like 7 pounds and Collateral Beauty, and this, my whole thesis, at least for my review, is these movies really rely on you being on the same wavelength as them. Because they're not, just to be, my review of this movie is it's not good enough to cross to everybody. It's not going to come to you. This movie, if you, maybe say you've lost a child, say you've had
Yeah, the level of which you like it will depend on how much you connect to the characters.
How many children you've had die.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the nichiest movie ever made.
I think it's, you know, I think there are two movies here, and one is really good, and one is just really bad.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see where the really good one was hiding.
The really good one shows itself very briefly in the moments when I feel it's about just people connecting with other people. When it's just when they're just conversing and having moments.
When Helen Mirren's talking to Pena's character.
Yes.
And just
moments like that. Moments when they're trying not to deceive a grieving man.
Yeah.
I think that would have been better if it wasn't for the way that they, I can't exactly call it a twist because a twist implies surprise.
Yes, exactly.
The way that it turns, because everything in this movie was telegraphed like it was by Western Union.
Until it wasn't.
No.
See, I guess I never see the twist, so I'm not a good judge.
Really? I didn't see that last twist only because I didn't want to believe that this movie would stoop that low.
Oh, God. Yeah, I saw that.
Do you know what I'm saying? I was like, no, they're not going to do that. Please don't do that.
That was that point I turned to Martin and I was like, seriously?
Please don't do that.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but still.
I would have given them more credit if they had left the last bit ambiguous, because that at least would have been different.
With the scene on the bridge?
The scene on the bridge, or the scene, the very, very last scene.
The Christmas Eve scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what this movie is about...
It's a few things.
Yeah, it's about 2 hours too long.
It's about making money.
Will Smith plays
going up against Rome.
An ad agency like owner, Howard Inlet. Is there any hidden meaning in that one? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Inlet is like he's drawn into himself.
That was like a rhetorical question.
Oh, sorry. Right? You say it in such a way that I was like, oh, he's asking it. I'm sort of a know-it-all.
It was fair. And you do tend to know a lot about a lot. So
no, I'm a know-it-all.
Good.
I know it. And I'm not being sarcastic.
I'm not going to challenge you on Star Trek again. That's for goddamn sure.
Like Denzel Washington said, I forgot the movie. He's like, you got to know who you are in this life. And I'm a know-it-all. I've made my peace with that.
King Kong ain't got nothing on Elliot.
I haven't seen Fences, so I don't know if it was that one or not.
Yeah,
Fences looks really good.
Anyway, we're not talking about future movies. Anyway, when we first meet Will Smith, he's he's Will Smith. He's very animated.
He's
funny.
Will Smith as fuck.
He's charismatic. Yeah. And then mere seconds later, it flashes to three years later.
And he's got gray hair.
Yeah, he's got gray hair.
7 pounds.
Yeah, his daughter, his young 6-year-old daughter has died. And apparently it's 2 years after his daughter has died. And he is just not getting over it at all. I mean, he is like building huge elaborate domino displays in the office.
That's all he does all day.
That's all he does all day.
And then knocks it over and goes home.
Yeah, he doesn't talk to anybody there. He refuses to answer any questions. The problem is his partners, played by Edward Norton, Michael Pena, and Kate Winslet, are very concerned because the business is lagging. They're losing clients because those clients were there in the first place because they really liked Will Smith.
He was the soul of it.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is he has 60% of the shares, and they can't do what they say if they're going to save this company and all the employees in it, they need to do, which is sell it to another company that's guaranteeing complete hands-off creative control for all you guys, and no one will lose their jobs, right? It's
that's
a great deal. We'll save the company. Yeah.
Like,
really good
that
deal.
That is the sort of deal that only happens in Hollywood, which is a one of a lot of what you can say about this movie.
But he won't even consider it because he's not considering anything. Yeah, it's not like he has something against the deal. He's just like, stop fucking talking to me.
In why his, is he leaving the house his, in the morning?
Shake his head and walk away from people way. So they're also concerned. They go, all right, so...
They're so concerned, they decide to drive him crazy.
Yeah, they decide that we got to fuck this guy over.
They're going to gaslight him.
Like, we're going to gaslight him. We're going to hire a crew of three professional actors who Ed Norton meets Keira Knightley of in a sort of weird meet-cute scenario.
More of a hit on the actresses lined up for the for casting.
Yeah, he's sort of the Ron Sterling for the 2016.
Yeah, I was gonna say
suddenly hit.
Yeah, this was Sterling Draper Cooper.
Yeah, this pretty much was.
But it's Keira Knightley, and he follows her back to the theater where she works at, and is putting together a play along with Jacob Lattimore, who's best known as a musical artist, but has had a few small acting roles, and then of course Helen Mirren says, "The thing is, we found out this guy that Will Smith has been." As part of his process, I get, is writing letters to concepts, to death, love, and time, basically telling them all, fuck you! Because dare you take my daughter from me?
Because in the beginning of the movie, he's talking about what are the things that connect us all and what are the things that let us sell shit to other people.
The three abstractions.
The three abstractions, death, love, and time, that connect every one of us.
But if you look at it on a sort of a higher level in terms of Will Smith's movies, which I can't believe I just said, it actually is funny because it's sort of like his character from Hitch is the beginning of the movie. Because his character from Hitch talks like that all the time.
That's so
every
true.
Will
That's
Smith so character talks like that
true.
All the time.
And it's like you know, there's that Clint Eastwood movie that what happens if the man with no name finally goes to die. I think that was Unforgiven. Was that? So this is like, what if Hitch had to live in the real fucking world and something bad happened to him? This is the collateral movie of it. I guess.
Well, going back on the collateral movie thing, collateral review.
No,
the collateral
but seriously,
movie.
You know, I feel like this is more of a this. I feel like this is more of a challenge for Will Smith. Like, I don't think he really, honestly, said, "Oh, I just want an Oscar for this." I think he was trying to say, you know, I've always done these roles. What happens when the person that's in this role gets out of the romantic comedy and has to have something bad shit happen to him?
Yeah, but that was also those other two movies I named, Pursuit of Happiness and Seven Pounds. Were both that sort of tragic, three hanky, poorly written weepers.
I know, but those movies didn't start with his Will Smith, Fresh Prince, being in both movies.
Let's face it, it was 10 seconds of Will Smith as the Fresh Prince.
It was enough, but he has so much context that, at least for me, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can imagine your entire 20-year career. You were probably awesome. I know exactly how this went. Go.
So you just wrote a whole lot of fanfic while we were watching.
Well, I do love Will Smith.
Anyway, they hire these guys for $20,000 a pop, which is fucking good. I would have done it.
Especially as out-of-work actors.
Pose as death, time, and love. And come to him as if they are the personifications in the most Neil Gaiman-ish way of these characters. And go like, look, you wrote me this letter. I'm here to answer you in the hope that two things will come out of this. One, that they can film it and he can be declared incompetent so they can not have to get his signature
with
in order
like
to make to sell the business.
Which would never work legally.
And two, falling under, like, maybe he'll find some healing through this. You're like, no, he's going to go in a mental hospital.
Just so we're not assholes. Maybe this will actually help
him. This will make
us look ourselves
feel better
about
this.
Big leap with which they were dressing up the, well, we've got to make him go insane so we can cash out.
Yeah. you know, the weird thing
I didn't get over it.
The thing about this movie, one of the things that irritated me is, like, I like a good magical realism film.
Yes.
And this movie sold, the trailers, 1,000% are selling you that magical realism film.
If you're going to
that is not the movie you're watching.
Yeah, I disagree.
No.
Hold on.
I disagree.
No, Chris, you're right, but I was thinking that too, but then midway I thought, well, how else could I, how could a person sell this movie, trailer-wise?
Yeah, but,
You know, I'm not, you know, selling these people or selling this film with these people who actually do, you know, orchestrating this, you know, plot. I mean, I wouldn't know how else to market this movie.
It's amorphous enough that you can't say it's not magical realism because the movie never says it's not.
I can. That was what you're talking about was abstract enough. That, yeah, if you have to find that in there,
you're not, but
you're also overlooking lots of shit that happens over the length of the movie to come to that conclusion.
No, I'm not. Okay. We are having two different interpretations.
We definitely
because
are.
Because it's two different movies.
You definitely didn't see the same movie I did.
I'm saying there's ambiguity. You're saying there's fact that it's not.
No, I'm not saying it's fact that it's not. I'm saying that's not really true necessarily. They're both equal levels.
No, they're not. If you're saying this.
Wait, no, you're making the claim that it's that. I'm making the claim it's this. Why does either one of us have the burden of proof?
I want to explain.
Okay.
You're saying something.
Please continue.
You're saying something is definitely
fucking
not.
Fucking lawyers.
You're putting out. You're saying.
I didn't say it was definitely not.
You said it right there.
No. I said the bulk of this film, the way it is structured and the information that's there, is basically saying, okay, so that's. It is this reality thing. They put in just enough abstraction so that if you really want to find that answer, you could interpret it as being this other way. But it's a cheap out, is what I'm saying. It's a cheap cop out the way it's done. It doesn't feel like genuine magical realism.
So, Chris is saying that it's definitely definite, and you're saying it's definitely ambiguous.
I'm saying definitely maybe.
Is that another one of these movies?
It's not in the genre, but what I'm saying is like you're saying that okay, this is a realistic movie. It's not magic realism, but they cheated and they put enough in so that you could draw it if you
want. They put enough hints to draw it in there if you felt like you had to have that.
And I'm saying you're interpreting it that way because it is so ambiguous.
No,
that's what I'm saying.
They're covering their asses by putting it in.
It's not even covering their asses. It's that they don't. Here's my problem with this movie. It was trying so hard to be clever, it forgot to be good. And this is the sort of thing where it's like, I want to do magical realism, but not really, but maybe it is, but maybe it isn't. And it's just, this is a guy who wants to have it both ways, but doesn't either have the faith in his audience or the faith in his own writing to make a declarative statement one way or the other.
Well, I wouldn't have the faith in the writing either, because I found most of the communications between these three as they're playing these caricatures with Will Smith, or, which is much bigger part of the running time, as they're having their own communications with the people who hired them. You know, each one has, like Keira Knightley is talking about love with Edward Norton, who's having problems with his daughter and communicating with him after his divorce. And Helen Mirren's talking to Michael Pena, who's very sick but doesn't want to admit it to anyone. And of course, she's deaf. And Jacob Lattimore is talking to Kate Winslet, who realizes she's getting past the age that she's going to conceive a child and is starting to think about time and things like that. And there's much more time spent on that particular aspect of the film than there is communications with Will Smith, to be sure. He's off on his own whole other movie that none of the other characters realize
is
happening.
And which
here,
is also part of the problem, because we are expected to care for him and care about his emotional journey, and we literally have 3 seconds of Will Smith being Will Smith, and then we've got Will Smith being like, well, I guess I need to be sad now.
But we don't know enough about him to care about him. Like,
we have no context for his relationship with his child, with his wife. We don't even know what the hell happened other than his child died. This is one of the things that disconnected me from the movie and his relationship with his friends. They never refer to his daughter. They just talk about his child, which is such an abstraction and a distancing thing.
Yeah, it's kind of cold in a way.
Yeah, I was like, okay, these guys are your lifelong friends and they don't even ever refer to your daughter by her name?
His kid or something.
Well, honestly, like, you know, talking about they're saying child and stuff, like, I do have a lot wrong with this movie. My problem, like, this is one screenwriter, I think his name is Alan Loeb, and I can feel all the revisions this went through.
You can definitely feel, like, the focus groups and the test screenings.
But the problem is that they never corrected the fundamental flaw, and they kept on trying to dance around the edges and say, well, we're going to pace this part up, we're going to pace this part up. We really want to keep this in this abstraction, so we're going to have them say child, not the name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They never fix the central flaw of this movie is, like Harris said, it never makes a choice.
Yeah.
It needs to make a choice of what you want to be. If you want to be magical realism, I love Meet Joe Black. Do that.
Yeah. I love it mainly because of Brad Pitt's death scene, which is amazing. it's one of my favorite death scenes of all time.
Someone asked me recently when I was at home visiting, when was Brad Pitt at his most Brad Pittness, and I said, Meet Joe Black.
Yeah.
Because he even criticized the movie on its press tour.
Yeah, he did.
I don't remember that. What did he say about it?
Yeah, he did. That was a big deal at the time. All right, so I do agree that major flaw is what we're all talking about here. But like I said, it's the fact the script can't manage to make these people anything more than Hallmark card spouting, homilies in everything that they say in these situations. It doesn't even matter whether they're real people who are just really getting into this role or actually these abstractions that they may or may not be. There's my thing to you, Elliot.
But
they're terrible. The script, the things they say are so, like...
Banal.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They even try to have it both ways there because they say the banal things and then they comment on it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you gotta, if you're gonna say this thing that is so obvious, you either need to sell that fucking scene, or you need to change the dialogue.
No.
You can't say something bad, like Will Smith has this entire part on a subway where he's going through all these platitudes, and then he comments on it, but it's like, you still said them. It's like, and you're not selling me on that you're done with these platitudes, so it's just sort of hanging flat. I'm disappointed in this movie.
I also want to comment on the way these people just throw around money like it's nothing.
I know, $100,000 becomes $1 million in like 2 seconds.
Part of their evil plan is to film.
That's just what we call pillow talk. That was a guy who was desperately trying to fuck Keira Knightley.
true. Well, part of their evil plan was to like film him talking to these people in the street and getting mad at them, and then CG edit them out, which, by the way, is fucking expensive.
It's expensive as hell, and from the way that it's filmed, one of the scenes is shot on a subway, and the way that it is filmed, and the perfect shot they have of Will Smith is literally impossible from the way that scene was blocked.
Yeah, you could take it
with a cell phone camera as well, wasn't it?
Oh, the other thing I loved was how great the sound was on that. Yeah. You can get an amazing video with a cell phone camera these days, but unless you've, like, wired everything for sound, you're not getting Will Smith like that clearly.
And that's the new Apple iPhone.
But all the problems that I think we're all having with this movie, I think I enjoyed it a little bit more, but they all come to that fundamental part that this really needed a second scriptwriter. Or somebody, a different set of eyes. Yeah, somebody need to come in and say, look, you're trying to patch up a bunch of little problems. But you wouldn't have these little problems if it wasn't for this big fucking problem.
Well, the big fucking problem is the premise of the entire movie.
Well, the biggest problem with me was Will Smith. He was more of he wasn't really a character. He was a construct. This is just, hey, this guy's grieving.
He's almost a MacGuffin.
Yes.
And we're expected to care about the MacGuffin at all. And
you're right, because like they rely on his star power for you to insert something for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they don't actually tell you that much about it.
It's unbelievably lazy.
And this is kind of insulting. This is far from a Will Smith vehicle in the end after watching it, I'd say. Well, there's just so much going on here.
I turned to Martin and said, I'm never going to probably ever say this again, but 15 minutes of this movie, I was like, man, I hope Martin Lawrence shows up with some guns really soon.
It just turns into Bad Boys 3 out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was like, please, God.
Oh, my God.
We're going to fix this because we know what we're going to do. What? We're going to invade Cuba.
Would Hollywood ever do that just like around Christmas? This is the Will Smith once an Oscar movie. But they don't tell any credits. They don't tell anybody. And they keep it all quiet. Middle of the movie, it just turns the Bad Boys 3.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Okay, that would get an Oscar vote from me. I love that.
They snuck in the thing this year with the woods being Blair Witch. Yeah. I'm like, why not do, like, sell it like this, and then, like, the same movie, and then you're like, how are we going to help him? It's like, hold on. I happen to know someone from his past who might be able to help. And it's fucking Martin Lawrence. He shows up. He's like, buddy, what happened? You quit the force and became an ad. What you need to do is shoot some bad guys.
Henry Rollins and the SWAT team rolls up. Come on.
He was in that movie. I have to go watch Bad Boys 2 now.
Oh, God. Huh. This is directed by David Frankel, who pretty much does nothing but schmaltz anyway.
Yeah, like Marley and Me.
Marley and Me, which is sadly probably his best film. And it's not a great film. The Devil Wears Prada, Hope Springs. I mean, this is the guy you call when you have Hallmark level schmaltz. And on the whole, that's pretty much what we're talking about here. And going on to final thoughts, I just, you know, this is just so thoroughly mediocre, which is a shame because look at this fucking cast.
The cast is amazing.
Look at this great cast of people in this movie.
Will Smith. The entire cast was brilliantly
got their roles, except for Michael Pena, who was basically playing John Leguizamo.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhat, yeah. But, you know, I mean, like...
You can't not see it now, and that's the problem, because he's really good!
No, I think even Will Smith is actually a really good actor. He just has a really bad agent. I've seen him be great in a lot of stuff.
It's not his fault here. He's not really given a character to be good with.
Yeah, agreed. It's nobody's fault.
Yeah. It's the director and the writer.
If anything, the actors are like, carrying this thing, like Will Smith in Suicide Squad... I will make this at least a mediocre movie if I fucking have to.
This movie works and it's more actor-driven than plot-driven, like, hands down. Because, yeah, this is the best thing about it is the performances.
Sorry about the cat.
That's fine.
You know, I mean, the only person I was like really like, okay, you're clearly just coasting through this was Ed Norton, who knows he's better than this material and he's just like, sometimes he looks bored, sometimes he's just overplaying it. He's clearly not putting a lot of work in on this one. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that in approval. I'm saying if you sign on to something, give it your all. Don't fall into that Anthony Hopkins nonsense of like, yeah, I don't really like this, but it paid for my new boat, so I'm just going to sleepwalk through it if I don't care, which is exactly what he's doing. But overall, most of these people, I mean, they're very likable actors and it's always fun to see them, but here there's just nothing for them to work with. At best, Helen Mirren chews up her scenery as best as she can, despite her having some of the worst dialogue of anybody in this thing that she's been given. I really, really disliked this movie down to its weird, lame third act sorta twist. Yeah, I give this 2 unwet handkerchiefs out of 10. Elliot?
I tell you, like, this movie, it's still... I'm probably going to have a different rating, like, a week from now. Because this movie's taken a while to ruminate inside me, just because, like, it is so, to me, ambiguous. And maybe I'm being too nice, but it has hidden... nuance that if follow me, if somebody I can see a better movie in this movie.
I'm sorry, I just have to quote Martin one more time where he said, you said that outside the theater. Martin was like, wow, of all the nice things you might say about this movie, that it has hidden nuance is not one of them.
It really does. I can see what it's trying to be, and I'm really upset at the screenwriter more than anybody. I'm upset at the studio because the actors were betrayed. They do not deserve the script that they got sent to them, and they needed a better director. This should have been a focus features film.
They probably got a different script initially.
Okay.
Before the rewrites.
It could very well. I only see one credited writer, though, and he's a hack. So.
Yeah. It's just, I'm just disappointed in this movie, but it did hit me right. And I want to say, like, what I said in the beginning of the view was, like, sometimes you have to be at a certain point in your life for movies to hit you right. So, for instance, it was about... 3 years ago, I was just coming out of a depression, and I watched this movie called Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Yeah, I like that movie.
And that hit me hard because I was in the right place to see that movie.
Wait a minute. Did your daughter just die?
No.
Wait a minute. You have a daughter?
No, but I'm trying to...
I'm so sorry. This film is fine. Everyone, this film is good.
Oh my God, he's touching me, people. What's happening?
It's on camera, don't worry.
This is a safe space, Elliot. It's okay.
It's okay, you don't have to talk.
What I'm saying, though...
What was her name?
Like, I'm trying to...
What was your daughter's name?
Ooh, I don't know. Felicity, probably. Okay.
We have that on
record
now.
Trying to go somewhere with this, and you just couldn't...
Oh, I know. I just want to say, like, I feel like this movie, if you like this movie, you're going to love this movie.
What does that mean?
You like this movie?
That didn't make sense.
Well, no. The first rule of Scientology Club is the first rule of Scientology Club.
Sorry. I mean, like, I'm sorry, that was stupid. If you're on the right wavelength...
Sorry, it was just funny, the reaction.
I didn't express it right. If you're on the right wavelength for this movie, mm-hmm. which is going to be a very small section of the population, you're going to love it.
Okay.
Like, if it hits you, that, I know it sounds stupid, I'm not getting it out right.
No, I'm sorry.
I just feel like it has potential to, okay, I got this. This movie has potential to hit the segment it's aiming for very, very hard.
I can totally see that written on the poster.
If you lost a child, this is the movie
for you. This is the movie for you. No.
This is my Dark Knight Returns.
You might be a person who this movie connects with. Well, maybe not.
Okay, I'm gonna end. For all of that, I'm gonna give it a 6.5 collateral ratings out of 10.
We're just dogpiling on you.
This is my Dark Knight. There was a Leog from a long time ago where Martin was trying to explain.
Martin trying to explain Batman R.I.P.
And it's like, yep, this is mine.
It's either that or it's my anime corner.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, sorry, I was laughing because of something that JC said a different review last night about. I mean, how losing parents was like a motherfucker. And, like I said before, I think there are two movies happening right here. The minute I found out, because I was sold on the marketing of this being a magical realism tale, and I love magical realism as much as the next guy, I do. But once I found out it wasn't, and...
Arguably, that's
what I don't know.
It tried to veer back and forth between a lot of different things. It really just exhausted me. How can I say this?
Be careful.
I just thought it was very emotionally manipulative and at every turn.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate when Hollywood does that. Because there's no need for that. But I think there are good moments here. You guys mentioned the banal dialogue. I tend to forgive dialogue that's trite and banal if it's truthful and it resonates on some level. And for me, it did. And the moments when it's two people talking is when the movie actually works. And I've always loved the concept of characters meeting randomly that would never meet and actually making an imprint on them in some way. And this movie does that. Doesn't do it this isn't an example of it at its best, but it is a somewhat worthy example. I like the idea, even though, again, it's on a base level, that a Hollywood movie actually takes the time to, discuss, time, death, and love, and why they are valuable, and why they should be acknowledged, and why they shouldn't, be taken for granted. But overall, I don't know. I think I don't know who said it before, but how much you will love this movie will depend on how much you've experienced in life. My plus one tonight has experienced grief at a similar level, and he's also had to battle an addiction, which means he had to spend a lot of time in a support group, and so this movie really got to him. I haven't experienced either of those things, so for me, I felt sort of detached. So I think everyone's experience is going to depend on, or everyone's relationship with this film will depend on their own life experience. I'm really jumbling all this up.
What you're saying is, if you like this, you're going to love it.
But if you love it, it's going to be mediocre.
I don't think...
It's going to be I.
I think that there's no either or. You're either going to love this movie or you're going to hate it because it will be the best thing you've ever seen, or it's going to be something that you wish would have been a lot better. Mm. Which is what I wish it would have been. But yeah, I think I am sort of split. I'm going to give this about 5 out of 10 unemployed acting troops ready to be hired by some corporate executives.
Harris.
Okay, so I want to say that the acting in this is universally the best they could possibly do with what they were given.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are some moments where there is actually some borderline, I will honestly say, some borderline genius, especially when Will Smith has his first conversation with the grief counselor. And finding out what comes later in the movie, you can look back at that and go like, oh, okay, this makes total sense now. But all of that, and like Helen Mirren, God love her, trying so hard, and Kate Winslet and Keira Knightley and Michael Peña are acting their asses off, and Ed Norton is just doing his like, this is like the fucking Italian job. I just want to do my scene, get my marks, and get out.
I think he's giving it as much as it deserves.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But here's my problem. And it's all down to the writing by a guy who is that really pretentious asshole in your MFA class who just discovered Neil Gaiman's Sandman and thinks he's being really, really clever. And this entire movie is very in love with being clever. And this, the first thing, like, the first thing I noticed was when they're going to the theater to where the, this acting troupe is, and it's the Hegel theater and the Hegelian dialectic, and they're putting on Hesiod, and I'm just like, okay.
And you can drop Chekhov.
Yeah, it's just, this is one of those moments of like, all right, well, you just want to show that you actually got a little benefit from your MFA class. Fine, sure, whatever. Clever moment, haha, move on. And then Elliot pointed out that Keira Knightley's character is called Amy, or Ami, or as in French for mon ami,
and
love.
It's Amy Moore, so love more.
Yes. And then, so as soon as you said that, I started paying attention. I was like, all right, they haven't said anyone else's names yet. And I don't think they ever said Jacob Lattimore's name in the entire movie.
They said hers. They said Helen Mirren.
But yeah, Helen Mirren's character was Brigitte, at which point I was like, oh, you motherfucker. Because, all right, they named love Ami. They named death Brigitte, which Bridget is one of the triple goddesses of the Morrigan. Bridget Bobbed and the Morrigan, who are the gods of death in Celtic mythology. And then there was Rafi, Jacob Lattimore, who's playing time.
Oh, they did say his name.
Rafi is Hebrew for healed by God. What heals all wounds?
Time. Yeah.
Exactly.
And heals porn.
I was going to go with porn, but...
This is one of those times, and this
say
is...
wine the, heals
the entire
time.
The entire movie is full of stuff like that, where he's very clearly thinking he's being very clever, and oh, only the smartest will get this, and he just spends so much time trying to be clever, and then try and get these profound statements that sound like someone who has just taken their first Philosophy 101 class and got really high, and now he's got these profound things to say about love. And time is like, but what if time's not linear? It's like, okay, good. Doctor Who beat you to that one.
Well,
Elliot and I spent more time quoting Doctor Who to each other because of what he was saying.
Keira Knightley goes off on the 10th Doctor's rant from the end of time. Like, I am light and darkness. I am the storm and the sun. It's like, oh, do you control time?
Well, then
they obey you?
Well, how about the fact when time is going on about, like, you know, people think time is linear. It's really an illusion. I was like, yeah, really. It's more of a wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey kind of thing.
It's those scenes, though, that with the actors, it's just, oh, God, because we know it's not magical realism, that it just feels so hollow and
where
it's
it
so
is.
Cold and just...
Yeah, it needed to make a firm choice.
So, yes. So
they should
like
have been brave enough to be high concept. I'm sorry.
So, no, it's okay. It's just like I was saying, this is a guy who's in love with his own cleverness, and to quote Grant Morrison, and clever is a fine thing, but sometimes the boy has to go out and meet some girls. And if this movie had something to say and wasn't so busy crawling up its own rectum...
If you like it, you're going to love it.
Look at you.
Then it might actually have had a chance to be good instead of just really, really fucking annoying. And that was the other thing. The constant, like, what is with this banal dialogue? Again, it's the guy going like, yeah, and yeah, see, I'm meta-commentary. Isn't that awesome? No, it wasn't awesome. We were dealing with plastic cutouts of characters. We were expected to care about characters we have no reason to care for. And they even had to throw in the wise beyond her years Hollywood child just fucking because. I don't even know why they had that in there when they could have had a much better, more realistic relationship with it. And even a moment where he's talking about how, well, my mom's got Alzheimer's and I used to have to correct her, but then and that made her upset, but then I realized, why don't I just agree with her and our relationship is so much better? And I'm sitting there in there going like, yes, I thought, listen to that episode of This American Life too. Very good, sir.
Okay. How much of that do you think is also because there were just too many characters?
It's a lot of characters.
There were a lot of characters. But we focused on so many.
Now this is the scene two with these two characters. Now make a count.
Yeah, so ultimately, you can watch a good movie clawing its way on the strength of its actors, trying to get to the surface, and it never makes it under the weight of the bullshit. So I'm going to have to give it 3 gaslighting best friends out of 10.
Okay, so a couple things before we finish up. First off, missed opportunity. When he first met Keira Knightley, who I can't remember if she was the second or third person he had a conversation with.
She was the third.
She should have been the second. So he goes, who are you supposed to be, time? She goes, no, love, actually. So I'm saying they should have.
I thought they were going to joke in.
Yeah, right?
See, that would have been legitimate.
That would take away credibility.
You know, that actually reminds me, though, if there's another complaint, not one, Keira Knightley needs to be in this a little bit more. She was not.
She's not in this that much. No,
like, no, she's no. Like
maybe 10 minutes.
And Kate Winslet disappears for a good chunk of the movie as
she
well.
She does yeah. as well, yeah. The other thing is, I would watch a sequel to this if it turned it from Love, Death, and Time to Lawyers, Guns, and Money. I think that would
yeah.
be
yeah.
I think that would be like, a fun movie.
He has to give Naomi Harris some props because she is just so radiant and so lovely, and she sells all of her scenes.
Actually, she,
I'm loving her more and more.
She gave the best performance in this entire film, I thought. Yeah. We haven't even mentioned her.
Yeah, it was the most...
Who's the grief counselor?
It was the most genuine performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the only one I was like, wow, she actually, like...
did research.
Yeah, it felt like she actually had the best dialogue written for her of anybody.
Yeah, because she wasn't the one that was trying to... She wasn't the one having
to... She wasn't trying to gaslight him, yeah.
She wasn't trying to gaslight him. She wasn't trying to excuse gaslighting him. Or she wasn't the one who was trying to give these pseudo-deep, like, meandering lectures about love, death, and time... either directly to Will Smith or to, you know, his best friends, so that he could come back and say, oh, yeah, sure, I checked out, but I see all of you clearly, and I'm going to give you the exact little bit of wisdom each of you needs to get your life intact.
Yeah, so that was the Legend of Bagger Vance part of it.
Exactly.
But, like, you know, you're right, because thinking about it, Madeline is you could cut... what Madeline and Will Smith's interactions into a completely different movie.
Yes,
well, it feels like they're in a completely different movie.
And I'd love that movie.
It would have been a better movie. Yes.
Yeah. It would have been a much better movie, but they, again, don't want to make a choice. So there's actually three movies
There are a few movies in here. Yeah. A few ideas for movies.
Yeah.
A few ideas.
I'm so fucking disappointed because I can see a good movie here. I can see a movie I would fucking love. And they just didn't fucking make it.
Nope, they didn't.
Yeah, this movie does need to be watched again to be dissected, but does anybody really want to do that?
I'll watch it again for the performances.
And the sad thing is he will.
I'd want to watch it again for Naomi Harris's and Will Smith's scenes. I would watch those scenes again just to see the dynamics between them and how they play it.
Time asserts at one point in here that time is an illusion. I'm saying it sure didn't feel like an illusion sitting through this fucking movie, that's for sure.
And just so many parts of it where it's like, oh, they're not going to do... They're going to... God damn it. Yes.
I didn't want to believe they'd stoop as low as they did with the emotional manipulation.
They stepped over the bar at that point.
It's like you thought you hit rock bottom and then they pulled out a pickaxe.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.